The time is 4:30. It's time for Talk with Old Timers, brought to you by the Sylvandale Nursing Home. And here are Doug Chapkus and John Van Skelvin.
Thanks, and good afternoon. John, that we're going to have to change the name of that program.
Is he calling you an old-timer, or is he calling me an old-timer?
I was going to say, you're certainly not one.
No, but doggone right I'm not.
You're more up-to-date than I am. I'm the one who feels old.
Gosh, all fish hooks. I'm not an old-timer. Here we're building a new office over there and getting there all ready to go, and then they called me an old-timer. I wish it was,
John, you work harder than I do.
Good thing there was a glass between us, or I'd throw this cup at him.
What was that? You were talking about that last program that was just on the air from the village of Spring Lake.
Yeah.
What were you talking
about?
Well,
he was talking about somebody rode up to the Hunter Robbins estate in a horse-drawn carriage.
Oh, yeah. That was that bicentennial.
Where'd they get the horses?
I don't know. I saw him by the Holiday Inn there getting off from a wagon or something.
Saw Dave Anderson had a wagon on his truck, or a buggy on his truck today, so I imagine they got one from Dave. Mm-hmm. But it just sort of comes out timely. You know, I didn't know what we were going to talk about this afternoon, and never do when we come up here. My cousin, Julia DeYoung, has been doing some research on the Laudit family. And she'd been looking through some old newspapers, and the other day she handed me a couple of little clippings cuttings that she had taken or copied from these cuttings in the paper of July 8th, 1891.
Whoa.
That's a long time ago.
I'll say.
But it brought back, I chuckled when I read it, because this past summer, we were going to try and have a horse-drawn vehicle run a bus back and forth to the lake, and Tom Parker had made up a pretty fancy bus. And he should have had somebody that knew something about horses with him when he bought the horse, because he bought a team of horses, and the one of them was lame. And so I don't know how he ever came out, but he...
The buggy never ran, though, did it, John?
No, they never got another team of horses.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether he got this farmer to take back the horse, or a farmer or who it was, a horse dealer, but it brought back a lot of memories to me, because my granddad was a horse dealer, and if he sold anybody a lame horse and there was something like that about it, he'd made it good.
Mm-hmm.
He was a horse trader, but he was one who had a reputation. He was an honest one. He had a reputation all through the county. When I was younger and used to get out in the country more and get around seeing people about insurance and real estate and so on and so forth, not that I don't still do this, but while I was younger, people still remembered my grandfather, but there's nobody alive today who remembered him.
Yeah.
That is, very few people. And but anyway, this getting back to this horse-drawn vehicle, it never operated. But I can remember the bus that my granddad had that he used to run back and forth to the lake, and he used it for other things, too. Like if they had the farmer's picnic out at the High Banks, which is out, just out past Pottawatomie a little ways.
High Banks?
Yeah. They always called it the High Banks. It was on the Grand River.
Oh.
And they had the farmer's picnic out there every year, and that was quite an affair. But I can remember that bus when we as kids used to play in it. But here's a clipping that Julia gave me that was July 8th, 1891. Well, there's two of them here. Maybe I'd better get the other one first. Let's see here. Oh, here it is. And this isn't dated, but it's got to be about the same time. It says, Henry Sprick's horse-drawn buses are now making several trips a day between the town and the lake. One had but to send word, and the bus would call at your door. And such a bus, high up from the ground, with three widely spaced steps at the back that small legs climbed up with difficulty. Two long seats faced each other, and you crowded close. get the other side of it here. Up to your mother to make room. To make room for others. Lunch baskets were shoved in at the rear and willing hands pulled them along. So, for we were not all bent on that on that indescribable, wonderful jaunt of a day at the lake. The driver cracked his whip for pulling the bus up the steep plank road hill on 2nd Street, caused the horses to strain every muscle. One felt sorry for them. However, reaching the top, Mr. Sprick whipped them up to a trot and owed the delightful bump of the planks on the soft and delightful, this is handwritten, the delightful bump off the planks and into the soft sand when the springs bounce up and down and you now let's see where's the rest of it. And you knew that you were, here it is. You knew you were fairly on your way to the lake. The picture painted on the side of the bus, white crested waves arching stiffly over a strip of yellow beach with the fascinating words surf bathing carrying over the whole. I can remember that bus as though it was yesterday.
Really? Now, that must have been about Grand Haven's first public transportation.
Well, I don't know about that. Now, here's another one. See if I can read this a little better. This is July 8, 1891, so that other one must have been about the same time. Yeah. Mr. Sprick will soon issue a time card in connection with his bus line. The time of leaving and arriving will be arranged so as to give every convenience to those leaving the park. Is hope that the public will appreciate the accommodations to them and give Mr. Sprick liberal encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether he ever made any money on it or not, as far as I remember him.
Well, how often did he run that? Every summer, John, or
every
what?
Summer.
He did,
yeah.
Huh?
That was a long bus, and as it says here, it was painted, it had a picture of the waves on the side
of it.
What
would he charge for that, do you suppose?
I wouldn't have any idea. Maybe a dime. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have any idea.
Well, did he leave just from one place and travel to...
Well, it's, according to this, it says that he'd pick you up at your door.
Boy, he couldn't have made out very well then.
He couldn't have made out very well. But the thing was, that was a bus about 20 feet long.
Is that right?
We used to play in it. It used to stand back of the barn or back of the house there. And as kids, we used to play in that bus, the Venn kids Bob Radicke and all the kids in the neighborhood. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know, just was something to play.
Yeah.
And then, as I said, they used it for the farmers' picnics and stuff.
When's your grandpa or your father, was it your father or your
grandfather? Grandfather.
Or your grandfather. Mm-hmm. Would he paint it then every year? Or would he?
No, paint lasted a long time. I remember it had yellow wheels and a black body. I don't remember much about the picture painted.
Mm-hmm.
That, by the time we came along, that was probably painted off.
Yeah.
But they used to use it to, there was a transportation in those days when we were kids that we were saying, I guess that was the last time we were on a month ago. We were saying that the automobiles were just beginning to come in unless
mm-hmm.
they... Used to set them up on blocks during the winter and
mm-hmm.
cover them up with a
yes.
canvas, and then they used sleighs. And we were talking about the roads and the
yeah.
weather in the good old days,
yeah.
they say.
Well, what had there been any ever been a bus before or a taxi before that provided local transportation, transportation?
There was a bus. There's a picture, and they had it out in the window of where our new office is going to be in the
mm-hmm.
dime store, or in the Cutler House,
mm-hmm.
of the Cutler House, of the old original Cutler House. And that had a bus on the picture. I'm going to borrow that picture from Ray Swanson and photograph it and enlarge it. But that had a bus, but that was a different type of a bus. That was a closed bus. That was a pretty fancy outfit. And the driver sat up high on it, on the roof of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a picture of that. I presume it's that same bus, but it was backed into my granddad's livery barn down on Fulton Street, and the team of horses in front of it as though it was coming out of the barn. And that bus, as I recall it, as a kid, used to stand over on 3rd and Columbus Street. There was a livery barn on 3rd and Columbus Street. And as I remember it, it belonged to Bert Stone. But it did belong to a fellow by the name of Dan Riley. And next to that livery barn, where Redeker's Garage is now, was Dr. Vanderveen's office. Dr. Vanderveen is the doctor that lived in the big house up on the hill across from the City Hall. Well, he had an office there that was, I don't know whether it was converted from a house or not, but as I recall it, it had a kind of a commercial front, a storefront, that is, a front went way up square across the top instead of the eaves. It was painted red and yellow, I remember that, and it did have a porch on it. Well, between the barn and that office, there was a, well, today you'd call it a carport. It was a shed.
Oh.
And that bus used to stand under there, and I think they just left it stand there and rotted away. It's just too bad that that wasn't saved, because that was a beautiful bus.
Oh, my land. You don't know who operated that, John?
No, I think Riley operated it in the early days. And you see, Doug, the original Cutler House burned down in 1889, 10 years before I was born. And then they, as I say, this picture showed that bus backed up to the curb. It also showed, I also have a picture of Grand Haven that was taken from the dock before there was any pavement, before Robbins's office was down there, or any of the buildings. The Grand Trunk, which is now the museum, was there, and the Grand Trunk Freight office was there, and there was a canopy or a pass-through enclosed from the dock to the depot, and that's on there. Well, I don't ever remember seeing that, so in my days. So that picture was before, well, before I was 5 years old or 6 years old, because I could remember back 5 or 6 years. So that must have been before the turn of the century that that picture was there. And that same bus was on that picture. So that's an old one.
Well, I'll say.
And when, of course, the Cutler House was burned down, and as the main street was burned down, and Leo Lilly refers to all that in his book and gives you the names of the stores and homes that were burned down. It started right about here in this, where our built, where we're sitting right
really?
Now. And it took the Cutler House and then went across the street where the People's Bank is now, which was Cutler's home, and then across the street and took the big church, or the First Reformed Church.
My goodness.
And went diagonally through there and up as far as where the Laudit Library and the Civic Center is now.
How did it get across the street, John? Was it windy?
The firebrands blew all over. And where the big store is, Eddie Boss's store now, was Vannebusch Brothers. That was a big frame building. And, I remember Hermie Van Santwyck had a picture of that store in his ad a short time ago. And a little story about it, and about that, how the fire had missed that, and how and why, because the Vannebusch boys got up on top of that building with a hose or pails of water and doused the firebrands that blew from the buildings across here. It must have been a terribly windy night. Oh. I remember my dad telling about it. Of course, he was living and remembered it. There's a telephone.
Yeah, how's I don't that know why that was, do you?
No. So, that's where the bus went, and I suppose that was probably the first transportation by bus around here, and that only went from the depot to the hotels and down to the Pere Marquette depot.
Like you say, it's too bad that one didn't get saved.
Oh, that was a beautiful place.
Yeah. Did it have seats inside or a long bench? What do you think, John?
I think that had a bench on the side because you entered it from the back.
Oh.
And I think you sat facing each other, and we are facing each other now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy.
And that had Cutler House painted on the side.
Oh, did it?
Mm-hmm.
When did taxis come into existence? And was there taxis?
The first taxi,
was there a taxi
that I can remember is when Bill Bronsma bought a Model T Ford and used it for a taxi. And then there was a fellow that ran a restaurant down where the Grand Theater is now, and his name was Brown, I believe. And he had a taxi. Yeah, that was a Model T open touring car, too. I remember the fellow real well.
Mm-hmm.
And I one thing I remember about him particularly, he always wore a white collar, and it was a high collar.
Oh, boy.
With a very narrow opening in the front. I remember when you wore a shirt with a detached collar. You had...
collar came separate?
Collar came separate. Fluid.
Well, I bet that was comfortable.
Yeah. They were starched, too.
Oh.
Or some of the fellows that wore them to work wore rubber ones.
Oh.
And then they could just take them off and wash them with a washcloth or a sponge.
Think how hot that must have been, John.
It was.
Wow.
Well, of course, it was one satisfaction. They could take them off.
Yeah.
But you had collar button in the front and in the back. I remember wearing that.
Can you?
A white shirt like that, sure. It was lion and it was lion collars and Kluet Peabody. Still arrow shirt.
Mm-hmm. But the collars were separate, huh?
Collars were separate, yeah.
What a shirt like that cost you, do you suppose?
Well, I worked in the Enterprise Clothing Company for John Vannebush about 1916, 17 or something like that. That was during the war. A good shirt like that was $10, $11.
Really?
Yes.
No different than it is today.
The girls all wanted to buy silk shirts for their boyfriends for Christmas presents. And I'd sold a lot of them for $10, $11.
Really?
Yeah. And then they had to buy the collar. And
that didn't have a collar on it.
It didn't have a collar on it.
What did that collar cost then?
35 cents.
I see. Was that a rubber one? Or?
No, those were linen.
Mm-hmm.
And they last a long time. You had to send them to the laundry.
Oh, boy.
Somebody asked me, talking about that, somebody asked me the other day, what was Paul Fortino. He picked up a ledger from the Highland Park Hotel, and it was there were some entries in this ledger of checks written to different people. And there was one check written to PAF Insurance Agency. And there was another one to Oaks. And there was another one to the Riverside Laundry. Now, this was, I think the date of it was 1907. And he says, where was the Riverside Laundry? He says, do you ever remember that? I said, yes, I remember that.
Where was it?
It was on Lafayette Street, just around the corner from Harbor Avenue.
Oh.
Setting up on the hill there.
Oh, yeah.
There's some houses up there now.
Mm-hmm.
It burned down. And a fellow by the name of Stafford used to run it. And Alice Werninger worked for Stafford. And Alice Werninger was, she died a good many years ago, but she was a girl that works up in the city clerk's office later when I knew her, up in the, above the fire station. And they used to call her Chink because she worked in the laundry.
Oh, my land, that wasn't
was
very
not
nice.
It was a Chinese laundry,
no.
But, of course, Paul didn't remember it. He's a few years younger than I am.
Yeah.
I remember that. And they delivered the laundry with a horse and wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow by the name of Williams used to work for Stafford. He delivered. He was Lydia Warner's father.
Mm. Well, when they pick up laundry and deliver it, is that...
Pick it up and deliver it, sure.
And you didn't go there yourself?
Yeah, you could go there.
Oh.
I'd been in it as a
had
kid,
you?
Yes. Of course, when we were kids, it seemed that we got all over. I guess we... I don't know whether we were abnormal or not. I don't think we were, but We got all over places.
Well, you had jobs that lent themselves
well,
to that too, John.
Well, I peddled papers, and yeah, and
you had delivery jobs.
I worked at the bakery and I delivered meat and stuff like that. Yeah, I was around all the time.
You know what I want to talk about for a minute? It always makes Claude mad, but I want to bring it up. We were talking about those cars last time and how they used to manufacture those cars in Grand Haven. And I was going to ask you about that guy who was going to invent that new motor. What's his name? Rupright.
Yeah, we always get
every time I ask Claude about it, he says, I don't know anything about that guy.
Well...
What did he invent anyway?
He had a motor. He was going to invent. I don't know what was different about it because we were just looking.
Well, it made a lot of racket, didn't it? Claude said it'd burn your pants right off if you walked past it.
He got it. He was over there on Second Street where John Difficult used to have the repair shop, and I think he was over on the other side of Second Street back at Steckity's too, where Bill Bosman finally ended up.
Wasn't he going to invent a new kind of motor, John?
He was going to invent some new kind of a motor, yeah. I don't know what was different about it or anything else, but he was always monkeying with it.
Made a lot of racket, though, didn't it?
Yeah, he'd get it going once in a while.
Glenn said there was an exhaust pipe or something out in the, out of the building somewhere, I guess. If he'd start it up, I guess
he'd
it really...
He'd get it going with no muffler on it. Of course, it would be pretty loud. I suppose it was a regular four-cylinder... engine that probably had a pretty big bore.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Good size. But of course, we were just kids. We didn't know anything about the motor and that. We were better carpenters than we were machinists. We built shacks.
Well, does anybody still have... I wonder if any of those cars ever got saved, like in these automobile museums or anything. Have any of the Grand Haven-made cars or trucks ever been saved, do you know?
I doubt it. I don't think they made enough of them.
Didn't they?
The thing didn't. It didn't pan out.
Did you ever drive one?
No.
Didn't you?
No.
I wondered if they had the standard gear shift and that kind of stuff.
Yes, it had that.
It did have.
It did have the standard gear shift, yeah. But I never drove one. I've ridden in a Panhard truck, though.
Was that a Grand Haven truck?
That's a Grand Haven truck when Vin had it.
Panhard,
yeah. That was made out on Fulton Street and part of the what's now the Keller tool company.
Oh, I see.
They had the Panhard motor, and then they had the Alter, and... there was a racing car that they made down on the end of 6th Street. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
6th Street in what was the old Grand Haven Furniture Factory. That was a tin-clad building down there, as I remember. It caught fire one time. They had a heck of a time putting it out because the water wouldn't go through tin and the tin wouldn't burn.
Oh, boy.
There were several factories down that end of town that... burned down, too. There was one of them, and I remember one day we were talking about, I guess it was why we were talking about that Van Motor Company down there we mentioned before. And I met Mart Ribbink on the street, and he said, don't forget Kilburn's Mill. Well, I was down there, too. Of course, these mills were all along the waterfront, and that's before my time. But I do remember Kilburn's Mill standing there, and I...
Well, were there a lot of mills? You said there.
Oh, yeah. Sure,
were there?
Sure. I couldn't name them all unless I could probably find it in the book somewhere. But there was Kilburn's Mill and Boyden's Mill and Fryant. And I think Reisdorp had a mill out on Beechtree Street somewhere. And Kilburn had a shingle mill. They made shingles, shingles. They didn't know what an asphalt shingle was in those days.
Oh, I suppose not.
And wooden shingles, and they made them.
What did all these other mills do?
They sawed lumber. They just made boards of any description. And then Kilburn had the pail factory where they made buckets, pails.
Really?
Barrels.
Was that... Were they wooden barrels?
Wooden barrels. No, that one was successful.
We talked about one. You said it never got off the ground.
It never got off the ground, but this one was, and this was Kilburn's Pail Factory, or Cooperage Factory, they called it.
Cooperage?
Yeah. So they that stood down there for years. Down on, it was a big red building. That stood about at the end of, probably a little further north than the end of 4th Street and on Adams, somewhere near where the old, it would have been west of where the old sewage disposal plant was.
Hmm.
Kids set that afire on Halloween night.
Uh-oh.
That was a heck of a fire.
Boy.
See that
you mean the place was still in business when they did it?
No, I think it was closed out. They were using it for probably storage and things like that. But
those kids caught the dickens, didn't they?
I think they got a ride out of it.
Did they?
Yeah.
That's not such a good thing to do, was it?
That wasn't too good.
No.
Yeah.
John, with whom did all those mills do business? Did they ship all that lumber away?
Most of it away. Sure.
Did they?
Yes.
Yeah. Were most of them successful business ventures?
Yes. Look at the money they made.
Yes.
The Laudits, he had the shipping, and I don't know whether Laudit was in the lumber business. I suppose the old Grandpa Laudit was. And there was Howlett and Fryant, and they shipped that.
Where would they ship it? Like the big cities?
Sure.
Chicago?
Milwaukee. Across the lake. You know.
Was there a lot of competition? Because Muskegon was a lumbering town,
that's
wasn't
right.
it?
Of course, this is all before my time.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is hearsay on that. I suppose there was. But they were shipping the lumber pine. It was mostly pine around here.
Now, there was not much lumber business anymore in your day. Was that really tapering off? Oh, it was all done already.
It was all done. There wasn't a lumber mill around here. There was a mill in Spring Lake. It was called Bell's Mill. And that stood about on the lot. Well, it did stand on the lot where Burnside had a home, which belongs to Bob Coyman now. On Barber, well, I guess it's Barber Street there. And they tore that down, and my granddad bought I don't know whether he bought all the lumber off from it, but he bought some of the lumber, and I remember we as kids going over there to that mill with a lumber wagon and a team of horses and carting some of that lumber home, and he made a barn out of it.
Is that right?
In the backyard. Of course, in those days, you could have the barn in the backyard and horses. We had 26 horses in the backyard. Nowadays, you can't keep
them. There were no zoning restrictions at all and that kind of thing. Did they have any kind of a zoning ordinance at all, or did anything go in the city at that time?
Not that I know of. Of course, I was pretty young, but
thinking
the zoning in those days. But
I wondered, could you go into a residential neighborhood and build a store, for example?
There were stores.
Because you see that, some of the old carryovers yet in some of the old sections of town.
There was a store up on Lafayette Street. No, on Slayton Street. That was run by Tony Coyman, as I recall it, and later Reen Buttbile bought it, and they tore it down, built a house out of it, and that was quite a prosperous little store.
Was it?
Neighborhood store. We used to bring bread and stuff.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to pursue another whole avenue yet, because you were talking about the lumbering business had pretty well faded out by your time.
Yeah.
And I want to get into what really were the thriving industries, what kept Grand Haven alive at that time. And we're out of time about, John.
Are we?
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to do that next time.
That half hour went kind of fast.
It sure did.
Well, maybe in next month we can pick that up again.
We'll try and remember what we said this time.
Well, it's kind of nice to just wander along as
we
do, and we go off in different directions. That makes it kind of fun, though.
All over. Yeah.
Well, our guest on today's program has been John Minskelvin. John, I really appreciate your doing this with us again.
It's fun doing it.
We used to do it a number of times, and it's kind of fun to get back into that again.
Yeah.
And I hope next month you'll be able to come up again.
I hope I will, too.
Good.
Lord willing, I'll be here.
All right, we'll look for you then.
Just let me know.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
Okay, so long, Doug.
Goodbye.
Talk with Old Timers was brought to you courtesy of the Sylvandale Nursing Home of Grand Haven.